Starting the year, new year off right there, Bill. That was my fault.
That's okay.
You know, we had a long rest for the Thanksgiving holidays. Everybody's raring to go. And
that's right. I think somebody left the turkey carcass laying on a computer key there for a minute. That's all right.
So we're back. We are refreshed and we're ready for the new year. We're now the Georgia show instead of the Georgia 2024 show. So that'll make it easier. We won't have to change thumbnails every 2 years. But we're back. So thanks for joining us. We're going to have a really, I guess, interesting and in-depth show tonight. A lot has happened. Obviously, we've been gone for a week, so you can imagine the news flow is pretty heavy these days. We're brought to you by the Georgia Record, georgiarecord.com. Please sign up for our newsletters. Sign up for our no-ad subscriptions. We're ramping up the ads because we've got a lot to pay for all over the country. And if you don't want to see those ads, you don't want to see pop-ups, pay us $10 a month. Subscribe with no ads, top right, and you'll get all of our content across all of our 13 and growing sites with no advertisements. People love that. We get a lot of good comments on this. Great way to support free media and help save the Republic, and at the same time, enjoy no advertisements. Bill, what do we got today? How are we going to,
So we're going to start by talking about some of the shenanigans that continue to go along in Georgia election politics. Garland and Tamara Favorito are with us. They will join us in just a couple of minutes and will take us through some of the things that are happening and some of their observations about things that have been said by Raffensperger and perhaps others. There's a number of other things going on. We reported from the Georgia Record earlier in this week about the continued case between John Padgett and the Georgia GOP, or GOP Inc., if you will, and the GOP's attempts to have a settlement agreement associated with that case sealed. And we're going to talk about that and the outcomes that that occurred and the questions that still remain. We'll also talk about, the sort of dastardly, I'll call it an assassination that appears to have been done against a CEO of United Health on the streets of New York, and the odd parts of what we're observing around that event that occurred apparently last night. And three or four more other things. I mean, one of the challenges we've got right now is we've got a lot of things going on in preparing for Trump's administration to take office. And yet there's funny dynamics going on all across it that are sort of uncommon. You've got some people fighting to make sure that they get the right nominees, some people fighting against nominees, no matter who they are, some people trying to block potential actions Trump could have. And in the middle of it, we've got folks asking for pardons from Biden and other things, kind of, rats are scuttling for the cupboards now that the lights are coming on,
Yeah, it's kind of like triage. I mean, we've got so much news coming in. We got to prioritize and curate what we want to bring to you, but that's what we're good at. So don't worry. Before we do that, I want to give a shout out to our biggest sponsor, David Cross, for the show, who is your friendly investment advisor. And if you've got a life-changing event, please give him a call. Death, inheritance, passing on of family assets, whatever. He can help you prepare for all of that and do it right, so you won't be surprised. If we could run a quick ad by him, thank you.
This is a special report.
Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
And Bill, towards the end of the show, I want to go over a new initiative CDM's doing nationwide. We're going to be putting on a big effort to try to educate people on why the Ukraine war needs to stop. We're likely going to have an event in South Georgia. The first one's going to be in Connecticut. Actually, the first one that's planned. We may have one before that, depending on timing. Looks like we're going to be in D.C., Dallas, Tucson, or maybe Phoenix, and other areas. So we'll keep you up to date on that, but we're going to be traveling around the country holding events and educating people on the Ukrainian situation and trying to keep our sons and daughters from going over there and letting Congress know that we don't want any part of it. Let's bring in our first guest, Bill.
Okay. Garland and Tamara Favorito, thank you so much for making time to join us this evening.
Good to see you.
Yeah, that's great. So we've talked several times since the election, and and the you know, the oddities in Georgia election politics continue to surface, and folks are raising questions about what people are doing, what counties, specific counties are doing, and so forth. So thank you for making time. I know there's several topics that you guys have spoken of this week. Which would you like to start with this evening so that I tee it up the way that you would like?
Well, I guess we'll start with the audit or the claims by Raffensperger that everything was fine. We ran two audits. They did a risk-limiting audit and showed that it verified that the audit proved that the system counted correctly, and that they then did a ballot image audit, and that one allegedly proved that everything was counted, I think, to use his words, accurately, securely, and quickly. And he goes on to claim that this was the most secure election in Georgia history. I think we've heard this before.
Yeah. Didn't we hear that from, gosh, who was it? Was it Chris Krebs or who?
Yes, Chris Krebs. So he's copying Chris Krebs' playbook. I'll probably parody that. But a couple of things, we sent this out to the legislature today and did a press release really to explain that this is just not really true. First of all, on the risk-limiting audit, that procedure was invented by Dr. Philip Stark. And Dr. Stark has written to the elections officials, he's testified in court, that you can't use a risk-limiting audit, which is his procedures that he invented, to audit a ballot marking device system. And the reason is there is no record of voter intent created by the voter. There's no voter marked ballot, which is the original source document from the voter. Instead, what you start with is a ballot marking device selection summary that the voter allegedly created. And that's not a complete audit. So from that perspective, that is bogus. And then the other thing that he claimed was that the ballot image audit shows that everything was counted correctly. Well, the ballot image audit starts with the ballot image. And no voter has ever seen the ballot image. So we don't know if that was what the voter voted or if it was electronically altered before the audit ever started. So that's not a legitimate audit by any way, shape, and form. In fact, we did a press release on this months ago before the money was ever allocated. And we contended again that that would be a fake audit. It would not prove anything because it didn't start with the actual physical ballot. You know, nobody wants to see the physical ballot. And that's kind of interesting in itself. But Raffensperger went on to say that the Heritage Foundation had ranked them number two in election integrity. Again, that was false because the Heritage Foundation only ranked Georgia laws, and Brad Raffensperger doesn't create any Georgia laws, so that's not a good reflection on him by any means. It's only a good reflection on the legislature, which he was no longer a part of. So those are some of the issues, that are just simply not being truthful to the voters of Georgia. And y'all have been reporting this for years. Most everybody listening knows, and even people who are not listening know, that he has not been truthful about elections and audits and that sort of thing. And in fact, the last thing I'll just mention is that they've been fighting tooth and nail to keep the 2020 ballot secret from the public, and have been running cover for Fulton County elections, and it's inexcusable. But that's kind of the state of where we are. So we just wanted to point out the fact that he's gaslighting Georgians again.
What a surprise. Did you say that you had sent, I believe you issued a press release on those particular findings either yesterday or today, correct?
Yeah, that's right. That went out yesterday, and we sent it to the legislators, all the legislators today, because He loves to gaslight the legislators.
Has anybody responded or questioned your findings?
No, no one has questioned anything that we've said. We just simply have, pointed out what the realities are. I mean, this system was rejected by Texas for security reasons before it was ever purchased. It was replaced in Colorado. The B&Ds replaced before it was ever implemented here. And Tennessee has removed it for severe accounting failures up there just 2 years ago. So to try to come out and claim that, we don't have any problems, that's typical Brad Ravensburger, but it's just not really.
Garland, I feel like I'm in 2020. And I mean, I feel like we're saying the same freaking things that we were doing 4 years ago. I know everybody's been fighting hard, but when do you think this is going to crack, or is it?
Well, I mean, I think it did crack. We had an honest, a more honest election than we had in 2020, and we got a different result. So I think to some degree it's cracked. Unfortunately, Ravensburger is still the Secretary of State. Chris Carr is still the Attorney General, and Brian Kemp is still the governor. So in that way, that's not going to crack for another couple of years. They're all going to have to move on to something else. And that's when it will start to clean up then. But I think the good news is that two things. One is that Brad, in the election, I think that Trump ran such a good campaign that he really made it too big to rig here in Georgia. They would have tried to rig it if they could. But the other thing is, I got to give hats off to all of our volunteers around the state. And they had eyes on everywhere. And I think that they put on too much heat to cheat. So that's got to give them credit too. I think when those two things working together, I think was what turned the corner on this election.
What about down ballot? Are you confident in the down ballot races? Because we've seen a lot of the, Trump won everywhere because they kind of had to let him win. But down ballot, it still looks pretty dirty. What about Georgia?
Absolutely. Well, there wasn't as many. Did you want to comment on that? Nationwide, at least four Senate seats and some House seats flipped. We're still looking into those, even though that's not our primary responsibility. But here in Georgia, we didn't have a Senate race.
Yeah.
And, of course, we had a couple of House races that are questionable.
Yeah, there were a couple of House races that flipped. Mm-hmm. And then we were talking with some people today that have analyzed some of the numbers of the down ballot races. And there's some really odd things where the local candidates got more votes than Trump in that area, in that county. And we're trying to make sense of what does that mean? Mm-hmm. And we don't have a real handle on it yet. But one thing that is real clear at this point is in the election integrity movement, we are not stopping. Mm. Yeah, just because Trump won, we really do believe it's because Trump ran a good campaign, just like Garland said. It was too big to rig, but that doesn't mean that there's not issues in these systems that have to be dealt with. And so we will go right back to the legislature when they're back in session in January.
Are you going to push for paper ballots, or what is going to be the end goal for voter GA?
Yeah, for sure.
Hand by paper ballots, publicly recorded hand counts. That was our top priority. Our number two priority would be to get rid of ERIC and Salesforce on the voter registration data. But we found out there's literally tens of thousands of ineligible registrations that votes were cast for here in Georgia.
We had that in Florida too. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's got to be dealt with. So that would be the number two thing.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say another one of our objectives is to put the state election board back in a supervisory role, if you will, of the Secretary of State, which they had back up until 2008, I think it was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they've got to have their own attorneys. They've got to have their own investigators so that
they can
really investigate the Secretary of State.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we think there's some legislative support for that.
Mm. Great.
That's talking about the State Election Board and their powers is a great segue into sort of the next thing that seems to be on the radar right now. And that is that Fulton seems to now be challenging the State Election Board's ability to even get information that they demand from Fulton County, even given all the stuff that was brought out during hearings last year. Can you share what your observations are so far and where you think this may be headed next?
Sherry Allen.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting that we now have the second lawsuit, Fulton County, against the State Election Board since Sherry Allen became chairman. The first one was challenging the State Election Board's authority to monitor. And then the most recent, they filed to quash the subpoena that was issued by the State Election Board for Fulton County's 2020 election records. They asked for 18 different categories of records pertaining to 2020, and it's still the State Election Board's effort to get to the bottom of what the problems were in Fulton County in 2020.
But the point is that this was not Fulton County. This was Sherry Allen.
Yeah, Sherry's the plaintiff.
The chair filed both of these lawsuits without the approval of the Fulton County Election Board and without the approval of the Fulton County Commission.
Amazing.
Yeah. And I think after the fact, she gets the board to ratify it, I guess is what you would call it. As of now, she has not gotten this latest lawsuit to quash the subpoenas. She has not gotten the board to ratify that. So we're not sure where that will go or where that can go at this point.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing.
There's a lot of people calling that whole dynamic out for a number of different reasons. Kevin Moncla issued a tweet. It was backed up and I think retweeted by Liz Harrington. And in fact, Liz Harrington was on a show, I think earlier today, might have been yesterday, talking about this dynamic. And I wanted to see if we could pull it up for just a moment. I think that would be interesting to show what she had to say as well, if we can bear with me for just a moment here.
Joins us now. Speaking of Georgia, I know you were tweeting up a storm today about how Fulton County has sued the State Election Board to try to avoid handing over records related to the 2020 election. Can you walk us through that?
Sure. Thanks so much, Natalie. Well, we covered a similar instance a couple months back with Fulton County hiring a high-priced attorney at $600 an hour to avoid an independent monitor over the 2024 election. And both of these instances stem from the historic State Election Board case 2023-025, which proved that the 2020 election results, the recount, was fraudulent. They counted duplicate ballots. They were tens of thousands of votes short. The whole thing was a fraud. The State Election Board has been keeping this case alive. They voted to subpoena all of these election records, which Fulton County has been hiding for over 4 years now. They voted, they issued this subpoena. Fulton County had a deadline to respond by November 18th. And what did they do on November 18th? They hired the same law firm without a vote of the Board of Commissioners in Fulton County. Just unilaterally, the chairperson hired back this attorney, filed a lawsuit against the State Election Board to try to quash this subpoena, which would reveal all of the records from 2020 having to deal with the mail-in ballots, the tabulation tapes, the open tapes, the closed tapes, many of which are missing, by the way, and have been missing since the 2020 election because we know that they stole that election. And so to this day, they are now lawyering up once again, trying to get it to a friendly judge to avoid having to turn over the records of what they claimed was the most secure election in history. And this just proves once again that Fulton County has so much to hide. They are so corrupt. They do not run fair elections. And I really hope the state election board continues to pursue this because they're going to keep rigging their elections down in Fulton County unless somebody stops them.
Well, and that brings us back to you guys. So, you know, in addition to the efforts of folks all over Georgia, it does seem that that's, you know, this next step in figuring out how to stop this is going to fall largely to the people of Georgia. I don't see our quote unquote political leaders stepping in to fix this problem. What do you guys think?
Well, I think you're right, Bill. And, you know, you just look at what happened with the first lawsuit. You know, Bridget Thorne, a Republican commissioner, tried to get it put on their agenda to discuss the fact that Sherry Allen had sued without getting a vote of the board and without bringing it to the commission because of this high-priced lawyer. And she was voted down, so the commission wouldn't even discuss it. So I think the corruption just continues, so it's hard to see how we're going to root it out of there. But I don't think the state election board will just give up on it. I think Jan Johnston, for one, will continue to try to fight this and get those records so we can see once and for all what was going on.
I hope that she will continue to have the support that she's had from a member Jeffers and member King as well. Sorry, Garland, I think I cut you.
Well, no, I'm just going to add, you know, what was interesting about that vote is that it required a supermajority because you're going to add to the agenda. And even Rob Pitts, the chairman, voted to put that on the agenda. But it failed. I don't know what the supermajority is needed. Apparently it's 80%, but they had one of the commissioners, I think it was Arrington, was out, Marvin Arrington, and they only had a 75% majority because the other commissioner voted against it.
Wow, fascinating. One of the things that struck me when you mentioned it, and I think Liz mentioned it as well, the fact that, you know, people are taking unilateral action. A chairman of one of these committees is going off and just doing something which is not in keeping with their practices and procedures.
It costs a lot of money. I mean, there has to be legal, you know, guideline or guardrails. I mean, she's spending thousands on an attorney without any legal authority. It's amazing.
Exactly. Yeah. And she's also, if you remember back to the weekend before the election, when Fulton County was one of the four counties that decided to open up their offices to collect absentee ballots, she did that without going to the full board. So apparently she really feels like she's empowered to just speak on behalf of the board in many other instances.
Yeah. I can't let this part go without recalling that Chairman Fervier is on, you know, he has a track record of doing certain things like sending a proposal for the monitoring to Fulton County without really getting concurrence from the rest of the board to do so, and caught many of them unawares from what I'm told, because they did not expect Fulton to be in the middle of choosing a monitoring company. And in fact, they in almost a comedic fashion, they choose a monitoring company led by Gabriel Sterling, who, you know, many have. Ryan Germany. I misspoke. That many people have questioned his role in the 2020 elections because he was so close to Raffensperger as well.
He basically was instrumental in the cover up of the 2020 election. He refused to conduct forensic exams on the machines. He called Coffee County liars when they exposed the problems to the that they had. They never could get the machine to count correctly for the 2020 election. And they testified to that at the House Government Affairs Committee on December 10th of 2020. And, Ryan Germany tried to basically got them investigated because they exposed the problems. So he was, in fact, as you said, Bill, he was instrumental in the cover-up. And that's just a couple of things. We could go on about that, but those are just a couple of examples to illustrate your point.
You know, you would think the attorneys in Fulton County, whoever took that case from this, you know, board member, they have to know that she doesn't have the authority too. I mean, you would think they would be complicit, but I'm not a lawyer, but it's just came to me. I mean, they have to know what's going on.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. These are supposedly very, very good, high-priced attorneys. But maybe the fact that they know that she can get it ratified after the fact is enough for them, because she's going to have the votes based on the makeup of that Fulton County board.
And get them paid. Get them paid in the long run. That's what they care about.
So kind of a broad question. I just want to get your take on this. You know, before before the election, Trump had issued a couple of basically cease and desist tweets suggesting that there was enough data being gathered or already gathered to alert the administration or campaign at that time if fraud was in fact being done or supported or both by various individuals. I wonder what we have coming at some point based on what we can see even now. And wonder if they in fact have that capability as yet, or as they put this administration together, that will emerge. Any guess as yet? I know that's kind of an out there question, but.
Well, I'm certainly hoping that the president, who's been a strong supporter of election integrity, I'm certainly hoping that he's going to put together some type of both legislative and litigation from perspective, both from the Justice Department to go after these folks that have, basically been hiding the election results and the problems for 4 years. But not only that, we've got to have some legislation that's passed because right now, just to shift gears a little bit over to the machines, which we know Fulton County electrically altered the results for the 2020 based on the evidence that we released, we've got to have something done about the machines, because this is a national security issue. Having voting machines with Chinese, running on servers with Chinese chips, you know, we all know now that the Dominion system is programmed in Serbia, and it's a foreign-owned company. It's Canadian-based. Why are we having a foreign-owned company with foreign programmers running on foreign hardware operating American elections? So I'm hoping that the president will address that as well. And because if he does it, no one will. So we're looking forward to this new administration coming up.
Yeah, there feels like there's some fascinating moves being readied, especially when you consider that the transition itself would normally be assisted by SES, Senior Executive Service personnel, GSA personnel, and others, and partially funded by the government. And they've turned all of that down. They've accepted the agreement, but they took that part and said, thanks, we don't need any help. We don't need any people. We don't need any of your guidance. We don't need any of your money. And so I'm hoping that that's a precursor to putting together something that does not have the aroma of the deep state still on it, as we've seen perhaps in the past.
That's a good point.
Yeah, be great.
Well, thank you for being with us. It's a pleasure. We'll look forward to your findings as we continue to progress. I'm sure they're going to be there, and we'll look forward to seeing you soon.
All right, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bill, before we move on, I want to talk about Christmas is coming, and I'm sure people are looking for unique gifts, stocking stuffers, etc. If you go to cdmstore.net, you can check out our merch. This shirt is flying off the shelves. Make America Healthy Again. cdmstore.net for our audio audience. We got that in red. Also, there's also some really cool designs, so check that out. In addition, you can go and to historyofbooks.com and get my first novel that's been re-released, and it's called Currency. It's a historical fiction kind of faction tied to today. The big comments that I get are, I stayed up all night to read it. What a great book. And also this one, that feeling of just not wanting to stop reading. So if you're looking for a book that is for someone who enjoys history or enjoys current events and looking for something different, go to historyofbooks.com and check that out. Back to you, Bill.
Okay, that's great. And the book sounds fascinating. It'd be a great book for the Christmas season. I thought we'd spend just a few minutes and talk about the case that we reported from the Georgia Record this week. Mm-hmm. This involves a current legal case between John Padgett, who used to be the chairman of the Georgia GOP, and the current Georgia GOP itself, GOP or GOP Inc., depending on what name they're using at the time. And they, in the middle of beginning to close up this case, the GOP proposed to take a settlement agreement and redact it, seal it from public eye, seal it from even the GOP members' eyes, if in fact members exist in this structure. And we questioned why. So several folks got together, including our team, and we issued an amicus brief asking that it be sealed. We felt that this document would be better served and should be served based on Georgia law in such a way that it can be downloaded or viewed and reviewed by the public. And very frankly, GOP members, they funded both the case that started this between Padgett and a former employee some years ago. They funded it as it's continued through now essentially, I think, 6 years or more. And it just seemed odd that they would want to seal it. So we asked for the judge to consider that. The judge did not take action on either the sealing of the agreement or our amicus brief when this first came up several months ago. I think it was August or September. However, they did ask the GOP and perhaps Padgett as well, asked to continue it. In the midst of that, John Padgett's attorney said, oh, by the way, we don't really have an objection to it, to the settlement agreement being made public. And we suggest, I think his words were, they suggest the court take previous law into consideration. And most Georgia law asks for any document in a court case other than very specific instances to be available to the public. It came up, it was continued. It got continued to October 31st. It got continued that day to December 3rd, yesterday. And lo and behold, overnight, the night before the hearing yesterday, apparently the judge agreed to seal the document. So we're waiting on seeing the actual order to seal and some other things. But it was interesting that we had challenged the GOP strongly, because we felt that this was a very important question for folks in Georgia, especially folks that feel like they are part of the GOP and really, you know, they've funded all this activity for many years. Shouldn't they have access to be able to see what happened? Well, what was interesting was the GOP came back and seemed to, you know, belittle our activities and belittle our question about why this would need to be sealed. And in fact, it was very surprising to us that the court made such a 90-degree turn on their actions prior to this. It seemed that they're setting back and waiting for the parties to come to some sort of an agreement. And again, it appeared that John Padgett's attorney was again questioning why this would need to be sealed. And in fact, in the hearing yesterday, the lawyer for the GOP asked that even the screens in the courtroom itself be turned away so that an individual who had been granted the ability to videotape the proceedings would not be able to tape the content of the screens. Why that would be, again, is a, it just seems a strange question.
It seems like a lot of work. I mean, it's like they're expending a lot of energy.
It does. Even though they did talk about the numbers involved in this. So it isn't just the numbers, apparently. There's some unknown factors that are causing them to really fight this. So we published this article in response to the GOP appearing to kind of almost mock those who are asking, why would this need to be sealed? Why isn't this being made available? And they actually came back and said that there was a confidentiality provision in the agreement that would prevent the GOP from releasing that. They made it sound as if this would prevent the GOP from actually releasing the contents of the document. It turns out that in documents filed with the court, it was clarified that the actual confidentiality clause was against only the original plaintiff in the case between the plaintiff and John Padgett some years ago, one Ms. Lewis. And so she was precluded from releasing it. However, the ability and maybe even the obligation to release it stayed with the GAGOP. And was codified within the agreement, apparently, as reported in this document. So it seems odd that the GAGOP would claim something that appears not to be the case. We don't know why that would be something they would do, but it is kind of notable. And we called out again the fact that this appears to be fully in their hands to release. And again, as we've said, John Padgett, through his counsel, did not seem to have any issue with it being released. Yet it's now been sealed, and we don't know why. So I think this may have continued coverage necessary. We will see. We'll continue to ask the questions, and we'll see what comes up.
Great work, Bill.
Thank you. So moving quickly on, because we're burning a little more daylight than I'd planned to. There was a very strange circumstance last night in New York City. United Healthcare's CEO, one Brian Thompson, was shot and killed on a street in New York. I think it was near 57th Street, if I understand correctly.
6th and 54th, I think.
54th, thank you. Yeah. And it was all caught on video. We'll go ahead and play the video first. For parents or others that may find this objectionable, this is the time to perhaps dim your screen or look away. We don't want to offend anybody. And it is somewhat blurred, but we want to give that caution to folks. And bear with me for a second here. Bear with me. I may have to download it again. Let's pause that. We'll come back to this, but I wanted to at least get the conversation started. We'll pull it down in just a moment and we'll show it. But it is notable. The video itself is, you can see one frame of it here as it begins. It seems strange in that many videos taken, ad hoc on the street or through security cameras or other things have a tendency to catch part of the action, part of the scene, one person, maybe not the other. This seems to catch both. And there's actually, when you get to see the video, you'll notice that there is a person standing to the right in apparently in a doorway opening. And you wonder, well, if this guy that's shooting this person is an assassin, seems odd he would do this right in front of an eyewitness. It just doesn't seem to fit quite right. And then further on in the day, Jack Posobiec, in this case, posted this picture from another camera somewhere else, a remarkably detailed picture that, again, is unusual for these kinds of circumstances. Many of these have a tendency to, you don't really see what happened or who was involved, but there it is. So we'll come back to this.
Yeah, I have the video here. Let me.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. You can see him walking up.
Now, for those that may know, that that appears to be a handgun with a silencer.
And there's another, I guess, point to that is that the gunman knew the gun jammed several times. Mm-hmm. So you see him clear the jam very professionally and very calmly. Yeah. So that's notable because it means it's a professional.
It would appear that way. Yes. He also walks carefully away until he gets somewhat across the street. Mm-hmm. And then other reporting is suggesting that he took a one of the electric bikes and found his way up towards Central Park, is my understanding. So again, how would they would know that with all the bikes moving around in New York is not quite clear at the moment. But this whole thing feels a little odd. And there are reports that tie United Health together with a cyber attack, which occurred some months ago. And they ultimately hired Palo Alto Networks in order to investigate the attack. Well, it seems that on the day of the attack, there are reports that we're waiting to see the actual reports from Trading Systems. But it appears that Nancy Pelosi may have bought a number of calls. In other words, the option to buy Palo Alto Network stock via a call. And I want to say it was a fairly sizable investment from what I can tell, and would have benefited when they actually got the contract to do the
investigation. There's rumors that he was under investigation by the DOJ for insider trading. So, you know, it looks like a mob hit to get rid of a witness is what it looks like to me, but who knows?
Maybe. So we'll likely hear a bit more on that. Hopefully there'll be some coverage on it that will explain further what, you know, what the circumstances actually were. Should we take another break?
Yeah, just to, we got a lot to cover, so I'm just going to quickly talk about the wellness company here. TWC.health/CDM, promo code CDM, 10% off. You can check out these wellness kits. They're fantastic. Emergency medical kits, I mean. And they have travel kits, first aid kits, the contagion kit for respiratory issues. If you have somebody that has those type of issues at home or susceptible to those types of things. And then the emergency medical kit has everything you would need for any kind of bio attack or you know, tick bite or whatever COVID type illness. So twc.health/CDM, promo code CDM for our audio audience. Protect your family. That's an important point we're talking about here. We don't know what's going to happen. We got 47 days to go, and then next year is going to be quite sporty with possible World War III and other things. So please protect your family. Back to you, Bill.
Even saying possible World War III sounds a little daunting in and of itself, doesn't it?
It does. Trying not to like scare people, but that's where we're at. I mean, we're launching multiple independent reentry vehicles from intercontinental ballistic missiles, so it's a serious thing.
Yeah. Well, it's also become, I think, clear to many that we actually have shooting U.S. personnel involved in a shooting war that's affecting Russians directly. Now, how many and how broad, we don't know, I guess, but this is not a hands-off operation for U.S. personnel, certainly. Okay.
Speaking of that, did you download that Tucker video?
I did.
Okay. I don't know if you want it ready to play it now, but I was just...
I certainly can. There's actually two that I grabbed. One is Tucker explaining that he's gone back to Moscow to have further discussion. And let's go ahead and we'll bring that up.
Yeah, let's play that one. That's important for people if you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Because it does speak to what we're facing right now. And the reason that CDM is launching a nationwide tour to try to stop the Ukraine war and educate people on the situation.
Yep. Okay, here we go with Tucker.
I think since we left Russia, Moscow, where we are now in February after interviewing Vladimir Putin, we've watched from the United States as the Biden administration has driven the U.S. ever closer to a nuclear conflict with Russia, the country that possesses the world's largest nuclear arsenal. It has accelerated ever since, and it's reached its apogee so far in the weeks after Trump's election. He's now the president-elect. In that time, just a few weeks ago, the Biden administration, American military personnel, launched missiles into mainland Russia and killed at least a dozen Russian soldiers. So we are, unbeknownst to most Americans, in a hot war with Russia, an undeclared war, a war you did not vote for and that most Americans don't want, but it is ongoing. And because of that war, because of the fact that the U.S. military is killing Russians in Russia right now, we are closer to nuclear war than at any time in history, far closer than we were during the Cuban Missile Crisis. That would mean the elimination of Russia, the United States, and most of the rest of the world. We felt there must be someone behind the scenes in Washington working to make sure that this conflict doesn't become a nuclear holocaust. But we found out that no, in fact, there is nobody. Tony Blinken, the current Secretary of State, cut off all contact between the U.S. and Russian governments. There is no back channel. There is no conversation. There hasn't been for more than 2 years. That's shocking. Meanwhile, most Americans have no access to any perspective other than that granted them by NBC News and the New York Times. They don't know how close we are. They don't know the Russian perspective. We've been trying for over a year to get that perspective out to American news consumers. We've also tried for over a year to get an interview with Zelensky, the president of Ukraine. We've attacked that from a bunch of different angles. We've spoken to a lot of different people around him, had dinner with them. We've been in talks continuously, and those efforts have been thwarted by the U.S. government. The American embassy in Kiev, which our tax dollars pay for, told the Zelensky government, no, you may not do the interview. You can talk to CNN, you can't talk to us. So we've been unable to speak to him. So we came back to Moscow yesterday to interview the foreign minister of Russia, Sergei Lavrov, the longest serving foreign minister in the world. He's been a part of this government for 25 years. He's been in the diplomatic corps for over 40. And ask him, where exactly are we? Are we headed toward an unprecedented conflict between Russia and the United States? Is there any way to peel Russia back from the east, from the sphere of China, back into the west? Is that alliance permanent? And does the election of Donald Trump mean an end to this war, which is reshaping the world, the U.S. economy, the global economy, and risking the life of every person on this planet? Is that possible? We just walked out of that interview. It's absolutely fascinating. It's coming very soon. We hope you'll watch.
What strikes me here is it's unusual for Tucker to do a promo for an upcoming interview. The last time I can recall him doing it like that was, in fact, before he interviewed Putin. And so what you have extensive experience in Eastern Europe and those countries and Russia itself. What are your thoughts here?
I think he's spot on. I don't think that, but, you know, there are people like us trying. We have our sites, Sarizm, TSARIZM.com, where we try to bring these issues to the forefront. We don't have the audience, obviously, that Tucker does. So I'm happy that he's doing what he's doing, because I do think, I tell people, you don't have to agree with Putin or the Russian perspective, but you need to understand what they're doing and why they're doing it. And if you don't, then how can you make an accurate and responsible decision for the American people? I don't think these people are working for the American people. I think they're working for somebody else, and they want a war. And that's what we all are trying to stop. And that's what we are going to seriously try to help in our effort across the country in a nationwide tour, which I'll talk about in a minute.
All right. One question that I have is, it seems some people are noting that given the fact that missiles are being launched into Russia, apparently, and there is active firing on Russian troops, that Putin seems to be at least extending some level of moderate response. He's not going to guns instantly. Are you surprised by that? Is there more going on perhaps than we're seeing? What do you think?
I think he's waiting to see. You know, they don't want a nuclear war either. So I think if you look at what's best for the Russian people long-term, maybe it's to absorb a few weapons and make peace with Trump in a few weeks, versus, you know, reacting with nuclear. I mean, he tested a intermediate range ballistic missile with multiple independent reentry vehicles. And we've shown that video over and over. But that is, you know, serious thing. And it's not a comforting thing to think that technology is being used as we speak. It's not hard to put a nuclear tipped warhead on that stuff and strike anywhere in the world. So check out Tsarism.com. It's our Eastern European site. We're not pro-Russian or pro-Ukrainian. We are pro-American children's future and peace in the world. But it's a great resource for understanding in Eastern Europe.
Okay, great. The next area, we've got about 5 minutes left. And the next area I'd like to have us chat about is the continued transition work going on to get Trump's administration ready to.
But before you go there, let me just real quick talk about the Connecticut event.
Oh, that's right. Yes, please.
On January 14th in Westport, Connecticut, at the VFW, we're holding our first Why the Ukraine War Must End Immediately conference. If you're in the area, there's also a live stream available. So if you go to ConnecticutSentinel.com with a C, spelled the old revolutionary way, you can check out the event and get tickets. If you're in the area or know friends in the area, please let them know about it. But this is the first of many events that we're going to put on. Back to you.
Oh, that's great. And those events will continue through the coming months, yes?
Yeah, probably through February, maybe longer, depending on the situation.
Great. Great. Okay. Okay, so I did want to just talk a little bit about the transition and some of the challenges that are that these folks are facing. You may recall that Trump had issued he'd actually signed the agreement that normally would be signed at the beginning of a transition plan. But he made one key change, and that is that he said they did not need any government money. And I believe that also included GSA and SES personnel didn't need to be involved in the process. So basically, he's continuing to attempt to transition in a different way than has normally been done and keep any undue influence from folks that might be part of the deep state out of guiding his administration. The challenge, though, is there appears still, and we've called this out in previous weeks, there seems to be some people within his team that continue to either propose or, in fact, make challenging decisions. One of them gets called out here by Emerald Robinson, and it's potential appointment of Sheriff Chronister to a post and yet to the DEA. Yet he's on record having given money and support to Obama and other things. It just doesn't fit the model of what I believe folks Correct. Expect the administration to do.
And we called him out on the MiamiIndependent.com, our Miami paper, pretty heavily.
Right. He's done some odd things. Here's a report where he had literally arrested a pastor for violating, certain COVID commands during the COVID lockdown and so forth. But when I read this, I immediately went back to something that we reported on Ukraine, and that is the fact that Zelensky was taking priests and pastors and arresting them for things that that he did not want to see them doing, in some cases just holding services.
Yeah.
So this struck many people very badly, and there was a large outcry. The gentleman Chronister appeared to say he was withdrawing himself, but Trump, according to the post on the right, issued a statement saying, no, he didn't withdraw himself. I withdrew him. This is not the kind of person we need in the administration. So
how does it get to that point?
That's the question. How is it that this gentleman and others, there's others that have come forward that have been proposed that people immediately have an allergic reaction to, and they said, what? Why would this be the person they would choose? This is not MAGA. This is not America First, and certainly doesn't fit the Trump model. I'm not sure. I mean, it goes back to, does he have, some moles in the, in the woodwork, and as these things come up, they have to be whacked back down. That's why we called one of the sections of the show today Whack-a-Mole. Is that what's going on? We don't know. I think you had said you saw some evidence of other things, perhaps down in Florida and other states. Maybe you could categorize what you're seeing a bit.
Well, we are concerned that the Bush blob down in Florida, Florida is not the gold standard for elections. We've had Chris Gleason on many times to discuss that. There is a lot of corruption down there. It's run like a cartel, and DeSantis is at the top of that. And now he's being talked about as Secretary of Defense. I mean, that to me is obviously the blob trying to put their man in power to stop any reforms at DOD. Why would that even be entertained? I mean, I neglected to get the picture of DeSantis mocking Trump with the Dominion attorney at his conference next to him, and he had the big truth sign in the Truth Social colors behind him, you know, like, we're the truth, not Trump. I mean, why would you put that person in a position of power? And then there's others in the Florida establishment. You know, Pam Bondi has a lot of questions. Waltz has some questions. So, you know, it's concerning. And we are just about the truth and to get the truth out. So we're going to continue to do that.
Yep. Yep. Well, that's about as much as we can shove into this evening show. Yeah. We will have plenty more come the next time. But why don't you take us out?
All right. Well, we'll see you Sunday. And thank you, Bill. Do you want me to...